So, we're going to start this off with a deal. So let's start the bidding off that $20, $20 bid of where? Can I get a $20 bid of there now? 30 now, 35 now, 40, 40 now, 45, 50 now, 55 now, 60, $65 bid of now, 70. $70 bid of now, 80, 90, 100, 100 now, quarter, 25, 25 bid of that, 25 there. 125 now, 50, 50 bid of that, 150, $150 bid of where? And sold $125
They got a
right
pretty
here.
good deal, I think. Yeah.
And then I started looking at trends. When's the best time to start buying Christmas stuff? Well, if you have
January.
storage, January. If you don't have storage, well, then you got to kind of be more choosy on what you buy. Like, I just can't go buy out the whole section in Walmart. I got to go buy, like, what do I think is going to be good for next year's Christmas?
For sure.
Right? And then you look at Halloween and Valentine's Day. Well, okay, I got to figure out when I want to purchase all this stuff, but then when do I start selling it?
It is kind of an interesting thing because, truthfully, the value of anything is based off what somebody's going to pay for it, right?
Right.
Hey, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified. I am your host, Jacqueline or Jax Kreider, and today we have Mr. Steven DeLuna. So, Steven and I have known each other for quite some time. Actually, in middle school is when he and I first met. So, we have had a long, long history of a relationship. He has done many, many things, which I'll let him explain to you, including me in the Navy, living in Japan for a really long time. So he is a super interesting guy. So welcome, Steven. We are excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're excited to be on the show today.
Thanks, Jax, for having me on board. And yeah, we've been friends for a long time. It's just it's great to actually be here so many years later on a podcast with you. I'm excited that you have this podcast going on, talk about money, different aspects about money. It's fantastic. And I love your passion and all the things I see you doing with all our different groups that we're a part of. So to have you invite me onto your show is super exciting and glad just to kind of talk about what I do. And what I do is I'm an auctioneer. I'm an entrepreneur all the way up. I'm an auctioneer. I have a woodworking business. I have a boat and RV storage business, and I DJ and MC weddings and proms of high schools with our brother. So I'm kind of the all around type of guy.
Yeah, you are. You do all kind. You wear all kinds of hats for sure. Well, and I mean, before you were wearing all kinds of hats, you were wearing a very different kind of hat on a Navy ship for quite a few years, like a big, huge, giant one. And for those of you who don't realize, Steven is a pretty big guy, and I always used to tease him about how in the world he fit in those little tiny beds on the really giant ship.
Well, the good thing was is the beds were actually 6 foot 5 inches long, and I'm only 6'3". So
Well,
I
there you go.
could lay straight out, but if you jolted, you hit your head or something. And there really wasn't much room to curl up into a little ball, so you kind of laid out straight. So
Yeah.
it wasn't too shabby. But yeah, I was in the Navy for 12 years. Had fun. I worked on missile systems and gun systems. I worked with military police, and then I had a lot of different type of other jobs that I did to help support. It was a lot of fun. I lived in Virginia Beach, Norfolk area, and then moved to Japan. Got out of Japan and stayed there. And I was there just for a total of 10 years in
I
Japan.
know.
And then you
So
came out.
crazy that you were there for that long.
Yeah, then you and your family came and visited me in Japan at
We
one
did. Yeah,
point.
absolutely. But yeah, now he's an auctioneer. I feel like you, before we have this conversation about items and value and things like that, I really feel like you should give them some indication of your auctioneering skills for a second, because I just think that would be really fun.
You know what? I think I can manage to pull something like that off. So, yeah, let's just start right above my shoulder up here. I have, ooh, where's there? There's my hand. I have this wonderful, it's a porcelain pillow I brought back from Japan with me. The geishas would use it to lay their neck, and then their hair wouldn't get messed up.
Oh.
So you could rest, and it was nice and cool in the hot summers. And it's a porcelain pillow, valued anywhere from $200 to $300. So, we're going to start this off with a deal. So let's start the bidding off that $20, $20 bid of where? Can I get a $20 bid of there now? 30 now, 35 now, 40, 40 now, 45, 50 now, 55 now, 60, $65 bid of now, 70. $70 bid of now, 80, 90, 100, 100 now, quarter, 25, 25 bid of that, 25 there. 125 now, 50, 50 bid of that, 150, $150 bid of where? And sold $125
They got a
right
pretty
here.
good deal, I think. Man.
It's a great deal. That's what you know, everybody loves to go to auction stores to find some awesome deals.
Right. Well, and today kind of we're going to talk a little bit about how, you know, over the years, you've got all kinds of trends, things that sort of come up as, you know, let's say, like, for instance, Beanie Babies. That's a big one that we did back in the 90s, right, where people were crazy over them. They were running all around town, paying, you know, all kinds of ungodly dollars for them. And now you couldn't really give them away. In fact, I'm pretty sure at my mom's house, we have like a good 100 of them or whatever. Now, I never bought them because of value. I just genuinely like smaller toys, specifically animals, because if I wasn't allergic to cats, I probably would have been a vet. So I love animals. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, so I mean, you know, people a lot of times make mistaken beliefs about all kinds of things, right? And sometimes they do really well and sometimes they don't do really well. So what are your tips for like when people are considering maybe doing side hustles or picking up things, etc., about what to consider, what to think about when it comes about those things? Because it could definitely put you in the poorhouse, or maybe the opposite, have be a really lucrative little side hustle to help make pull in some extra dough.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you brought up Beanie Babies. Yeah, they lost a lot of value from what they were worth. But essentially, just like with anything, it's whatever it is you want to collect and whatever value that you give to it that you feel that you want it for. So yeah, I can go and sell 100 Beanie Babies for like $10 right now. That's just unfortunately where the market is on Beanie Babies. But, you know, you have that one person that sees that one Beanie Baby and they're like, oh my gosh, I've been looking for this one. I've always wanted it. I didn't have this one as a kid. I will pay you $100 for that single one. But it's what the value is to that simple, to that single person. Same with artwork, right?
Sure.
Artwork, you see, like, why was that thing priced at $1 million? I have no idea, but somebody loved it enough to price it at $1 million. I mean, I'm happy for them. They got something that they love. So that's fantastic. But with more on point to what we're talking about, you know, there's trends with everything that goes on. People that want to get into how I got started with everything. I started off as a personal shopper for people. That's really how I got started. I would go out to all these like antique shows and stuff like that. People would be like, hey, I'm looking for this while you're out there, so you can find it for me. I'd go out there, I'd find something for them. They kind of give me a price range. I'd bring it back and I'd charge them 10, 15% of the price of the item. And that's how I made some extra money. So I was like a personal shopper for these people, trying to help them find the things they didn't want to go out and try to find.
Sure.
And then I kind of turned that into, hey, while I'm here, let me buy some other stuff. So I turned it into more of a side hustle. Let me do buy and resell. You know, let's try eBay. Let's try Mercari, different aspects. I was selling Tiffany jewelry.
Nice.
You know, I took you to a store in Japan where I got all my stuff from. And I believe you got yourself some really great purses for a really good deal.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you still have those or not, but.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So those right there.
Say, I'm a shopper at heart, big time.
Yeah, I know. So you found things that you loved while I was out there shopping. You got some stuff while I was shopping. And so all those things right there is just kind of like, I started to focus on that. And then I started looking at trends. Like, when's the best time to start buying Christmas stuff? Well, if you have storage, January. Mm-hmm. If you don't have storage, well, then you got to kind of be more choosy on what you buy. Like, I just can't go buy out the whole section in Walmart. I got to go buy, like, what do I think is going to be good for next year's Christmas?
For sure.
Right? And then you look at Halloween and Valentine's Day. Well, okay, I got to figure out when I want to purchase all stuff, but then when do I start selling it? You know, you go look at Lowe's right now, and Halloween's already out the door, and Christmas stuff's already sitting there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and to give some people some context, we're recording this roughly in the middle of October, right? Because this episode will air for a little bit. But I was actually went to a grocery store today. It's the middle of October, and there was Christmas tree, like, you know, those little Debbie cakes? They were already out at the grocery store. And I was like, why do we have the little Debbie cakes out for Christmas already? Why?
Because it's trends. The people, they have to start getting the stuff out now.
Yep.
So that way, everything that you produced for the last few months, it's ready to go out. I mean, you're going to start going to, like, what? People are going to start going to Christmas markets, right? And they want to go and buy those little gifts at the little craft fairs. Well, all those people that had that stuff, their mindset was, I'm going to start in May, June, making my stuff for Halloween and Christmas.
Right. Absolutely.
And then now as soon as Christmas season ends, then it's like, okay, I got to start building for Valentine's Day. So all those craft people, just like us with them, you know, with my business of resale, is what's coming up and what do I want to sit on and not sit on? Because I could go out and buy all this stuff, and the next thing you know, I have $10,000 out in product that's sitting in my house or in my warehouse, and then I'm not making any money because I spent $10,000 on Christmas stuff and I'm nowhere near Christmas time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think, truthfully, the way that we're buying now has kind of changed a little bit on like how value looks. Because, for instance, back in the day, there wasn't such thing as the internet. So you couldn't exactly, like, you know, when grandma passed away, you know, you took all of her stuff and maybe gave some of it to Goodwill. You did a big like yard sale, garage sale type thing, or estate sale, right? Which in essence, you know, was the old school version of like kind of like an auction or, you know, et cetera. And you just tried to sell the stuff and get rid of it, right? Because most of the time, most people didn't want most of grandma's stuff. Well, now you can have an auction like what you do for a living, put it all online, et cetera, because there might be somebody 6 states away that has been looking for the replica of what their grandmother had that broke or something that they reminded from their childhood. You know what I mean? Or it has value there where, you know, the children of grandma are like, I don't want that stuff anymore. Yeah. Right. Like it has no value to them. My mom actually, for those of you who don't know, is actually an antiques appraiser. She specifically appraises rugs. That is her kind of specialty, if you will. But she says that it's such a dangerous thing to go into a home after somebody has passed to do an actual appraisal because of the fact that a lot of times you're doing really quick appraisals of like all the different items and just really rough stuff. And the truth is that like what happens if that one random little painting in the hallway that looks like a little nothing to you, you didn't realize was actually a Picasso. Okay. And you did, you know, you said that painting would go for like $2,000 and it was a Picasso. It would have gone for millions and billions of dollars. Right. And then people end up getting sued, et cetera. And so it is kind of an interesting thing because truthfully, the value of anything is based off what somebody's going to pay for it. Right.
Right.
And like artists specifically, that's a really hard one because most of the time it's really not worth much until they pass because now they can't keep creating items. Right. That kind of devalue the items, you know, the amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And your mom's fun stuff that she does, I've had some fun conversations with her about her appraising and stuff like that. And she goes in there and, you know, gives those estimates. You're just talking about like an artist, right? Well, they kind of treat that like you do real estate. We have comps that yep. we look at. I'm not a certified appraiser. I hope to be one day. But as a certified appraiser, I know that their word has to stand like by the like in court. Like they have to be able to go to court and say, this is why I valued this price. And it's really interesting. That's a whole another interesting world. I love it. It's quite entertaining for seeing what the values are out there. But yeah, it's just, you know, how do you know that was a Monet or not? Well, mistakes happen. Thank goodness for insurance.
Yes.
We have errors and omission. Like, real estate agents do. They have errors and omission insurance. Mistakes happen. And, you know, I'm only an expert in a small field of things. So sometimes I come across items just like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what this is. And I got to call on other experts to help me out. But yeah, it's pretty interesting the way that all that stuff goes with the values that are.
Well, and it's definitely something that people can, like, if they are looking to do as a side hustle, the biggest thing is you're just going to have to research the heck out of it. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to, some of the stuff is easy, right? Like for instance, it's easy if you're going to Goodwill and you find like some major label brand, right? And you kind of have an idea that may be worth something. Then you also have to be really careful because there's lots of really, really good fakes. And so if you're not really careful, it definitely could kind of come up and bite you. So definitely just understand that if that is something, you know, if you're looking to do it and it's just for your own personal use, you can find some great deals sometimes if you kind of scour, you know, Facebook Marketplace, the internet, you know, thrift stores, garage sales, all that kind of good stuff there. But if you are making it more of like a serious side hustle, you definitely want to kind of do your research and have an understanding of items, and things like that, because you definitely can get your rear in a sling in a hurry if you're not really careful.
Absolutely. Like, I know who to go talk to if I want to know about purses.
What'd you say? Yeah.
I know who I want to talk to about purses. That's
I was
going to
say, I told Stephen and guys about this book, and it's so hilarious. I bought it on accident. I think one day it was on sale or something from Amazon, and I bought this book, and then I didn't read it for a while. And then I was on like vacation or something, and I was like, oh, okay, I have some time, spare time to read a book, because I'm an avid reader. I love to read. And so I was like, oh, this book is interesting. And it was called Bringing Home the Birkin. What I didn't realize was I thought it was like a fictional book, but it's not. It was more like a memoir or a autobiography, if you will, about this gentleman who kind of found his passion on accident. He moved from New York to Barcelona for a project that he was supposed to work on. And then the project fell through, but he was already there and he'd already rented like this apartment, all the things. And so he was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? He was trying to make sure he could make ends meet. And so he was selling some stuff on eBay, right? Like some designer stuff that he had accumulated. And he sold this Hermes scarf that he had bought for a party he went to. And he knew nothing about it. He just like put real basic stuff about it. He knew it was an Hermes scarf and he knew it was like these color waves or whatever, and he knew the size of it. That was about it. And he posted it. And this woman bought the scarf, and this lady messaged him after she bought the scarf, and she was like, do you have more? And he was like, more what? She was like, more scarves. And he's like, no, why do you ask? And she's like, she asked him all these very specific questions, and he started realizing, oh, these scarves apparently are kind of like a big deal. They're like very collectible. There's like all of these specific patterns are more collectible than other patterns and whatever. And he's like, and I'm in Europe, like one of the best places to get it. And for those of you who are not aware about a lot of the French brands like Hermes, Chanel, and Louis Vuitton, they never discount their items. Never. They never go on sale. They literally would rather burn the items or put them in their vault than sell them at a discount. So if they have a product, let's say, and let's say maybe it's a weird color, right? Like it's a plummy purple color and nobody but me really thinks that color is awesome. Everyone else is like, ugh, plummy purple color, whatever. And so they make this bag and like it just bombs. They're going to take and like take all the rest of them, either like destroy them, put them in their vault or whatever. Well, now later on, that makes that thing become significantly more valuable because nobody else wanted it. So there's not very many of them, right? And so that's what most people just don't really understand. And so it's a fascinating story, just helping people understand, you know, that a lot of times there is value in things that you don't really necessarily see. And you can make a lot of money at it. That's not what he did. And he ended up trying to find a bunch of Birkins and buy Birkins. Because for those of you who don't know, you can't just walk into a store and buy a Birkin.
No,
they will not let you.
Nope. Waiting lists.
We could have bought one, though, in Japan. Do you remember that? Michael tried to convince me that orange one.
Oh, yeah, that was
I just don't like orange. It's not my color. I'm not a fan. I'm usually like blues and purples and greens, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it was actually a really good deal. But yes, I mean, Birkins are sort of like the holy grail of handbags. So for those of you gentlemen who have no clue what the heck we're talking about as you're listening to this podcast, I'm just letting you know that Birkins range usually anywhere from about 10 grand to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yep. And you're talking about no discounts, even the ones you see the celebrities wearing, they didn't get those given to them. They had to pay for those. They do not.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So a lot of times celebrities, if they have a specific one they want and they're not really tied in to like being able to get those Birkins easily, they actually will overpay. Because what will happen is somebody who has the ability to buy it. So like, let's say that I can request from my sales associate a specific one and they approve it. Then once I purchase it, then that celebrity will actually buy it from that person at a markup. Mm-hmm. And the markup can be substantial. It's the same thing. I don't know if you're aware of this. Did you know that Ferraris do the exact same thing?
I didn't know. I thought Ferrari had like a, you're not allowed to resell.
So no, you can. Yeah. But so there's very, very specific rules. So like, for instance, Ferrari, you can buy these like very limited edition ones, but they only let people buy them who have owned like some entry-level Ferraris or something like that. Like, basically, you have to prove that you have had loyalty to the brand. Once you've proven that, then you get kind of ushered into this more echelon group where then you can potentially buy these, you know, more exclusive Ferraris. People will buy them for, like, crazy amounts of money, like $500,000, right? And then after they drive it for a year, Ferrari will actually buy it back from them at a higher price because it's worth more and they can resell it for more money.
I didn't know that much.
Like 150 grand more. Like we're not talking about like 5 grand or something. It's like one of the only vehicles on the planet that actually can increase in value. There's some others, obviously like super, super rare ones and things of that kind of sort and kind. But a lot of people just don't realize that there is money. It's just a lot of it's like about rarity, right? I mean, when you're talking about items, it's talking about trendy, like what's trending, like what is something like, honestly, let's be real. So Steven and I are 80s babies, and a lot of 80s babies, as they're coming into their own with money, they want to buy their vintage toys. Those toys that mom and dad said, you know what? We're not keeping this crap for you in our attic for 40 years. Like, screw that. We're getting rid of this junk. And they sold it, gave it away, you know, whatever the heck they did with it. And so now our generation is seeking out a lot of those old toys. And so they've gone up crazy amounts of value.
Oh, yeah. Pokemon cards. We saw a resurgence like a few months ago or a few years ago, I mean. And it's still going strong.
Oh, yeah. My nephews are all about Pokemon cards. They were actually, one of my nephews came up to me the other day and told me that this one Pokemon card they had was worth $1 million. And my sister-in-law looked at him and was like, babe, if that was worth $1 million, we would have sold it. I promise.
Yeah. And then sports cards are coming back. It's just insane what, you know, the fun stuff, you know, 80s baby stuff, the little things. I was talking with a guy yesterday and his whole back wall was nothing but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle collectibles.
Oh, those got some value for sure.
He does have value in that one. You know, there's, you know, in the auction world, we're always looking for what's the valuable stuff around us.
Sure.
And it's all out there. Like, you never know. You know, certain things, I find new stuff every week where I'm like, I had no idea this thing had this type of value.
Yeah, and I was going to say, a lot of times, that's the other thing is that if you're not doing this as a side hustle, and you're listening to this episode and you're like, I have zero desire to ever research things, have new side hustles or whatever. If you do have a family member where you like inherit stuff or somebody passes away and you're now responsible for getting rid of the things, don't just like, you know, find a knowledgeable expert, like somebody like Steven, who's going to come in and help you figure out, you know, how you, first of all, most efficiently get rid of it, you know, get decent value, because it is going to be a balance. Everybody feels like their stuff is the best and the greatest and whatever, right? Just like everybody's kids think that their parents' stuff is crap and we don't really want it or whatever. And you know what I mean? Not entirely, but kind of, right? And so
stay tuned. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Imagine having the power to control your financial destiny, no matter where you start. Welcome to the Financial Mastery Simplified course and resource platform, where financial education is tailored to your unique journey. We cover everything you need, from basic budgeting and saving strategies to advanced investing and retirement planning. Learn at your own pace with lessons that match your level of experience. Whether you're a beginner or looking to enhance your financial knowledge, join our community of learners and benefit from shared insights and expert guidance. The Financial Mastery Simplified Course and Resource Platform equips you with the skills and confidence to take charge of your financial future. Ready to master your finances? Enroll in our courses today at the Financial Mastery Simplified Course and Resource Platform. Start your path to financial independence now.
Hello, and welcome to PBJ Mortgage, where your home ownership dreams become reality. Today, we want to share why choosing PBJ Mortgage is the right choice for your home financing needs. At PBJ Mortgage, we're built on a foundation of values that drive us every day. Our commitment to educate, empathize, and empower our clients sets us apart in the mortgage industry. Our clients are at the heart of everything we do, and their success stories speak volumes. With years of experience, our team possesses in-depth knowledge of the mortgage programs, ensuring you receive expert guidance and the best possible rates. We offer a diverse range of loan options to suit your unique needs, including conventional, FHA, VA, and more. No matter your situation, we've got a solution. At PBJ Mortgage, we pride ourselves on providing personalized service. Our dedicated loan officers are here to guide you every step of the way, making the process as smooth as making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We understand that time is of the essence, which is why we've streamlined our processes for efficiency and convenience. Transparency and clear communication are paramount. You'll always know where you stand throughout your mortgage journey. Reach out to us today to set up a call to discover your options. If you're ready to make your home ownership dreams a reality, contact PBJ Mortgage today. Let us empower you during this exciting journey. Phone number 4-693-733-107, www.pbjteam.com. Visit our website or give us a call to get started. We look forward to helping you secure your future home. PBJ Mortgage, where home begins.
Thanks for your patience. Now back to our conversation.
Just don't shortchange yourself by like getting rid of stuff, you know what I mean? Until you kind of have brought somebody in, because a lot of times there are some very significant valuables you may be overlooking. And so if you don't want to do the work, which is fine, then find somebody who can help you with it.
Yeah, call one of my friends for me. I love if y'all just give me a call. I'd love to help you out. You know,
I was going to say, Steven will nerd out by coming into your home and like being like, ooh, what's this? Ooh, let me do this.
Of course. And it's a fun job in that sense. Because you're always nerding on new stuff. You know, like you're saying, you know, like, hey, you know, check with us on what stuff might want to sell. You know, we can walk into a house and, you know, look around pretty quickly and be like, all right, we can do this. We can get stuff sold for you.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, with auctions, you know, the price starts low and it builds up. And some items may never reach their potential that you think they should be worth.
Sure.
So my safest thing is always thinking like, all right, this thing's valued at $100. If it's not a collectible, just imagine you're going to sell it off for like half off. If not.
Right.
But if it's a collectible and you know people want it, then you might be able to get the full amount for it. But in our business, there's a lot of mixture of resellers mixed in with end user buyers or your collectors. So some items you may be like, that should have sold for like $50, $60 more. And then other items you're like, oh my gosh, what did I have? That thing sold for like $1,000. Like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Not know that that was because it jumped up to $1,000. And then next thing you know, you learn something new, like, oh, should be looking out for these things more. And then another thing, clean out. Sorry.
No. You're fine. I was going to say, it's just a balance, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people either one way undervalue some of the things that they have and they short sight themselves, or the opposite way. They feel like everything in their house is worth $1,000,000,000. And you're like, no, that's not necessarily true, right? I mean, let's be real. A lot of the things you own, they're great for you and they're great for your family. But that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody else really wants them.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and then the other thing is like when people start cleaning stuff out, you know, don't just throw stuff away. Take a look and stuff. Older people, especially if your grandparents are around, like, you know, near the Great Depression time frame, if they're coming up there like 100 now-ish, and they might hide a lot of money inside books or in mattresses or underneath a fake plate in the bottom of a drawer.
Oh, yeah.
They don't trust the bank still.
Sure.
And even like my parents, baby boomers, they still remember the stories from their parents. So they still keep stuff hidden. So just don't throw stuff away because you might be throwing out.
There's also some cultural aspects to that, too. Like people who have come here from other countries where their banking systems were not very secure or whatever, right? And they saw family members lose a lot. Those are also cultures where, because we see that a lot in mortgage, right? Yeah. Like when we're trying to help them buy a house and they have all their money like hidden somewhere in their house or in a safe or something like that. And we're like, no, you have to have it in a traditional method for me to track so that I can show that this money wasn't like laundered. You didn't just like go, you know, sell off a bunch of drugs or something to get this money. And so, I mean, even though I know that that's not most people are not doing anything like illegal with the things, it doesn't matter. Like we still have to prove it. But culturally, we see that a lot where people who've moved here, maybe from other countries, they are very terrified of pouring in that money to traditional spaces and things like that. But you're right. That's a big thing that I never even really thought about is, okay, so grandma and grandpa pass on and we didn't go through all their stuff really thoroughly and we accidentally threw away thousands or gave away thousands of dollars hidden in books.
There was an auctioneer buddy of mine. He was doing a barn clean out And there was a bunch of wood sitting up on a counter or on a shelf. And he just took a picture of the wood and said, you know, old oak, old growth oak for sale in the auction. And in the end, the guy comes to pick up, he sells it in the auction for like 10 bucks. Some guy comes in to pick up this wood, and as they're clearing the wood out, they found a bag with over $25,000 cash.
Oh my gosh.
And the guy that had won the pile of wood, he had every right to say, this is my cash, because the way that the terms of that condition had of that auction had worked. And, but thankfully he was a really nice guy, and together they were able to give the family, hey, here's $25,000 extra cash we found for you guys.
That's crazy. And good for them. Good for him for like doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people probably wouldn't have done that.
It's kind of weird. Whenever you're dealing with money, it's how quickly karma comes back to bite you in the butt on stuff like that. So it's just better just to, you know.
Well, part of the reason we talk a lot about money on the show, but in lots of different aspects, is because many people don't realize how many aspects there are of money. They have their, whatever their viewpoint is, right? And whether that's been built on experiences, cultural implications, generational differences, how their family dealt with money, right? Preconceived ideas, things they've heard from experts or whatever the case may be. And all of this is clouding their money space, if you will, right? Their money philosophy. And I'm a firm believer that you can live life on your terms and you can do it however you want, right? Whatever philosophy aligns best with you. And it's why I try to create perspective for people, because the truth of the matter is how I would do it is not necessarily how you would do it, which is not necessarily how even your wife would do it or your parents or whoever the heck else, right? So we all have to kind of come up with the best solution. But the only way that we could create a money philosophy that really resonates with us as a, you know, to the core and like allows us to succeed the way that we're going to succeed is by peeling back those layers and asking ourselves questions and getting different perspectives and thinking to ourselves, huh, I never thought about that before. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, I never thought about the fact that like when my parents die, I should look at all those kind of things. Now, my mom is uber logical. I pretty much know how she rides, and she's like very covered off on how she handles things. And my father pretty much goes with the flow, AKA does what my mother would like, as far as that is concerned, because, you know, happy wife, happy life, I guess. But anyhow, I personally probably wouldn't worry about that. But there are some other relatives in my life that maybe we should think about that with, right?
Right.
Like, honestly, like hoarder individuals, right? Because hoarding things, they probably also hoard money places too.
Yes. Yeah, we do hoarder cleanouts. We actually had a job come up where we was like 4 bedrooms. It took us 4 20-yard dumpsters to get rid of everything in this house.
Wow.
And we were searching high and low through everything just to see if we could find anything of value to help them recoup some of the cost on the clean out from the hoarder family. Unfortunately, we didn't find much in there, but we did find some hidden gems here and there. I wish there was a lot more than hidden gems, but he did have some money stashed away. And the family knew, like, hey, we're looking for a safe and we're looking for a shoebox. If you find it, please let us know. So, like, they at least had some idea to tell us what to look for.
Well, but at least there was that.
Yeah, at least there was that. But, oh, my gosh. Hoarder cleanouts. There's people that do that, too. It's a dirty job. But I know the family doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's hard for a family to deal with it, I think.
Sure.
You know, another big part of our job is empathy. And being able to work with people in multiple situations, especially when somebody passes away. Money is a very big topic when somebody passes away.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Are we going to take care of the house? How do we take care of electric bills? What are all the other bills we got to take care of? You know, cleaning up. You know, there's just so many different questions. So to walk in there and be able to help the family out is a interesting part of the job, needless to say. And even if it's not a hoarder's house, you know, like I always book a full 8-hour day if I'm going to go talk with the family about a house clean out, because they're going to want to tell you the whole life story of their whole family. As you're there walking through, you know, they have a story about everything you're getting ready to hopefully sell for them, and they want to share that, and you want to be empathetic to them. So it's almost like being in this job is almost like quasi being like a psychologist or something like that, a therapist. You're just there to be part of a situation with them. And, you know, as we talk about the money aspect with this, money is always the number one thing that comes up in the conversation. and have those people worried.
Well, and it creates challenges because let's be real. You have people who really haven't been in that person's life, and all of a sudden they show up and they want to claim a bunch of things or say these things should belong to me. I mean, people just don't realize how deep money is like ingrained in us, right? Whether it's like the traditional sense of money, you know, it doesn't matter. And it does change people. It is very psychological. It's very like in tune, you know, with your core or whatever. I mean, I was literally like reading a Facebook post yesterday about a woman who was super heartbroken because a really good friend of hers, there was like this rift that came between them and they're basically not being friends anymore. And she had recently come into some money and she was actually planning to give her friend like $10,000 to help her because she knows like the husband's out of work and there's like some challenges there. And she was just genuinely trying to help. And so many of these women were like, you know, why would you ever do that and whatever. And the lady's family was telling her if she gave her friend this $10,000 that they were going to disown her and stuff like that, right? And that's just a crazy thought to me. I'm like, first of all, I understand what they're saying. They're trying to protect their family member, right?
Yeah.
From just, you know, giving away this money that probably got inherited by, you know, another family member or whatever. But once that money is in that other person's hands, it's really within their control. It's not your decision anymore of what's happening with that money. And I was talking not too terribly long ago with another individual about trusts. And how trust is like a way you control your money sort of beyond the grave. But there's so many different like depths, if you will, to money. And people just don't think it through. Like they don't realize. But you're right. Like when people pass away, it's a mess.
Oh, yes. And, you know, just quickly just throw it out there. Get your affairs in order. It doesn't matter which age you are. Take care of your family, living wills, all that fun stuff. We had a whole conversation about this yesterday. You know, if your stuff's set in place now, just save the burden of your family. Cause if you go into probate, you know, you're looking at months, maybe years to take care of stuff. And that's just money that goes down the drain. So if you're financially smart, it's better to still pay the lawyer now to get the living will done instead of having to deal with the lawyer's $350 an hour, during probate. So
100%. I always tell people that you can either plan ahead of time or you can plan after the fact, but after the fact's going to cost you 3 or 4 times more at least.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I did a whole episode with a guy who represents Legal Shield, which is basically like they can do wills and stuff like that, too. But they'll represent you like you basically if you're paying a monthly amount, they will represent so many hours of attorney's fees if you get like sued or any of that kind of stuff or whatever. Right. If that makes sense. And so it's interesting because a lot of times people just don't think about that. They just think, oh, you know, I don't need any of that kind of stuff, or I don't need to talk to an attorney. I don't need to deal with this thing because I'm young, et cetera. And failure to plan can cost you big time.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process right now of 4 different clients who are trying to downsize before they, as they know they're getting older.
Right.
And so they're downsizing now and having some more control over the items that I'm selling for them. You know, they're nicer items, so we can like, put reserves on items so we can make sure we get good price on them.
Sure.
For the client, but their whole process is like, all right, we're going to do this now. The next 6 months will be this, and the next 6 months after that will be this. I'm like, oh, sweet. It's kind of like I have a subscription service to my auctioneer serving services. I know I have a job coming up every so many months for these clients, and they have a goal of, all right, we're going to be out of this house by the next year. We're going to be into a smaller house, and, it's kind of like, all right, sweet, good planning. You know, my parents are doing the exact same thing. They have me selling stuff for them. So, you know, if you have family members, you know, they're older and they're ready to get rid of some stuff, you know, they don't have to pass before you start downsizing. You know, my biggest thing, like I told my parents, was just sell the stuff now and take the money and go on an awesome vacation and enjoy life.
100%.
So if I sell something for you and I make you $10,000, that's a good chunk of change to go on a vacation or to get something else that you want. Why sit on it and not enjoy life?
Oh, no, exactly. Well, and that's another psychological thing. And I'm the world's worst. Like, I recognize this about myself is that I definitely get trapped up in buying too many things because we a lot of times associate more things with higher value in our lives, right? Like, if I own more things, if I have more stuff, right? And we are seeing kind of a little bit of a shift in that. Like, I give my brother heavy credit. He is definitely more of a minimalist than me. Like, I'll never forget as long as I live. You're going to laugh so hard because you know my brother. So we went on a vacation and my brother and I are sitting beside each other. And he says to me, Hey, Jax, do you think that you could ever own like 5 pairs of pants? And I'm like, total? And he's like, yeah, like just 5 pairs of pants total. I'm like, no, absolutely not. I was like, 5 pairs of pants in each color? Maybe. Because I own way too many things. But I'm like, 5 pairs of pants total. But my brother, if it doesn't really bring him joy, like he just doesn't own it or doesn't hold on to it. And it's probably a way better philosophy a lot of times than even my own. And that is what makes his life better. But it's just, I mean, it's just a really funny concept to me. And we do sometimes we take too many things. And especially as we get older, we a lot of times would also realize that the reason we have a hard time selling something or like selling something at a price that we don't think is substantial enough, right, is because of like what we attach to it. Like, for instance, like this little thing that sits on my desk, which you guys can't see. It's like just like a little crystal lotus flower or whatever. The story behind how I received that has way more value than probably the item itself. And so if I gave it to Steven and I said, look, I want you to sell this for me. And he's like, okay, well, you know, you could buy these off of eBay for $3 a piece. And I'm like, but this thing to me is worth, you know, $100 or whatever, right? The reason it's worth $100 to me is because of the intrinsic value. The fact that I have associated some, you know, emotions with it, experiences with it, etc. And so a lot of times we just have to sort of force ourselves to get past some of that and recognize and realize that it may hold that for somebody else, but that's not necessarily, you know, it may hold that for us, but it may not be that way for somebody else.
Yeah. And that's with a lot of stuff in a lot of people's houses. You know, as you were saying, I was kind of like looking around my office and was kind of like, yep, everything behind me has some sort of something. It's not worth the whole bunch up there, but it's the little things that I've collected that I like, you know? So, but I know, at least I'm realistic enough to know that it's not worth all that much in the end. So,
sure.
But the stuff that I do know that's worth stuff, you know, I have like notebooks of information for the family. It's just kind of like, hey, wherever I go, don't let this stuff.
Oh, my mom does that too. We know all the things. Trust me, yeah. All the different finds she's found at Round Top and all the other places in the world she's traveled and gone to, and all of the different things. But well, this episode has been so much fun. Tell us a little bit about how to reach out to you if people are interested in maybe seeing if you can do an auction for them or something of that kind of a sort. And what was the most fun for you today?
Okay, so again, Steven DeLuna with Intriguing Auctions. Jax will have all the information for you to click on. A lot of people can't spell intriguing. I still mess it up. I just thought it was an intriguing word. I was intrigued by it. You may be intrigued by what you find with us. You're going to hear intrigued or intriguing or intrigue somewhere in a movie or a TV show, and you're going to think, oh, that's an auction company. If the word's all over the place, you just don't realize it until it's stuck in your head. So you can reach out to me at steven@intriguingauctions.com, or you can go to intriguingauctions.com, the website. There's links in there to get a hold of me. If you just have questions about the auctions, you have stuff you want to sell, I would love to come have the opportunity to see what you have, converse with you about those stuff. Also, I do charity auctions. So if you are involved with a charity and you're trying to increase the money that you're bringing in that charity, a live auctioneer can really help boost the event and help bring credibility to the money that you're raising in that auction. And all that stuff's on the website for you to take a look at. And just, again, reach out. We have auctions coming up all the time. Estates, coins, jewelry, machinery. There's lots and lots of things out there. So come check us out. And I really enjoyed today just the fun, simple, just straightforward conversation, being able to talk with a good friend about money and just different aspects on how money impacts the lives around us. So I'd like to thank you, Jax, for having me on board today. It's always great seeing you go out and do the things you do as well. And to be a part of that is, I feel, a great way to enhance our friendship as we continue on in life.
Well, we very much appreciate you being our guest, and maybe we'll have you back at a different time or whatever. But thank you so much for listening to Financial Mastery Simplified, and we hope to see you again next week. See you later.